we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, BC, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, June 23rd, 2017. I'm your host, Sinead Sanders, and I'm joined here today by our guest co-host, Jillian Walters.
Hi.
And our co-host and operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there, and thanks for joining us, Jillian.
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. So as with any given week, this past one was filled with news and events affecting animals all over the world. But there's a story in particular from here in the Lower Mainland that's been getting national coverage. Last Tuesday, new hidden camera footage was released from the latest undercover investigation by advocacy group Mercy for Animals. The video was shot by a whistleblower at more than a dozen BC chicken factory farms that supply a Lilydale slaughterhouse in Port Coquitlam, and depicts workers ripping the wings and heads off live birds, throwing, kicking, and stepping on birds, using their bodies to mimic sex acts, among other forms of abuse. Today we'll feature an interview with animal rights lawyer Anna Pippis, who will weigh in on this investigation and what it means for both the human and non-human animals involved. So stick around for that interview in about 15 minutes. Some concerned citizens and local activists have actually started up some protests at the Lilydale slaughterhouse in Port Coquitlam. And Jillian, you were there for the first one last Saturday, weren't you?
Yeah, we arrived and there was probably about 20, 25 activists there, silently holding signs. There was probably the biggest media turnout that I've seen at any events recently.
I heard that all the media came.
Yeah.
Thanks to the press release that was sent out. That's fantastic, because the media is really interested in I guess, continuing big stories that break, that are like breaking news. And so it's great that you all went out right away.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I saw you all out there.
They were very open to having conversations with them, behind the cameras as well when the cameras were off. So that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the reception of the media and the people around, how would you say it was received then? It was, they're willing to talk now, and it's not just.
Yeah. Quite a few people I talked to were appalled, even though they're not vegan. They were really appalled at the animal abuse, but still we had lots of conversations about dairy.
Oh, yeah.
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 That's an interesting segue from chickens to dairy. Good for you for bringing that up. And what did those conversations entail? If you can just give
us
a summary.
Usual comment, I just can't give up cheese.
Oh, and they just need to listen to our cheese show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's an easy one.
Yeah. So we showed, we handed out pamphlets and referred them to watch Earthlings and other shows like that to get more information.
Dairy is effing scary on YouTube.
Yes.
It's 5 minutes, very informative, everything you'll ever need to know about dairy. And then there's chickentorture.ca as well as the Mercy for Animals website that they've set up that actually shows this egregious cruelty in the undercover investigation, if you haven't already seen it yet, because it's been on TV and the internet a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very powerful.
And anybody who buys chicken products or animal products, really, when this footage is out there of where these things come from, I'd say we've got a duty to make ourselves aware of that. And rather than turning a blind eye, as people have done historically, it's as you said, a lot of people are responding to this with, they're shocked and appalled.
Yeah.
And it's you know, but those of us who have been paying attention to these issues for a number of years, it's not shocking.
You know, I really like the idea that Jeff Regier put on the news. I saw him on, I think it was CTV or the Global News Story, where he says he wants to see closed circuit television, otherwise known as CCTV, cameras put into these barn areas, so that anyone can tune into the internet and see where their chickens are coming from.
I love that idea, mm-hmm. having it streamlined.
They did that in France, didn't they? They made it a law that there's got to be cameras in slaughterhouses in France.
And I know in the UK as well, there's been a call for that. We did an interview about that years ago. Really interesting. If you want to look it up on our website, animalvoices.org, just punching CCTV to see what the initiatives were about that. Mm-hmm. We need to get that transparency out there because you know, I was just reading in the news the other day that the animal agriculture industry in Canada is saying again, like, oh, it's really, and there's like a conservative MLA leader who's tied to pig farming. And he was saying like, oh, it's just really unfortunate because the families that bring up these animals really care about them. But how many times can someone say that farmers really care about their animals and would never torture them or hurt them when we keep seeing these undercover cruelty investigations come up, right? Mm-hmm. It's not isolated.
They choose these farms at random, and every time they find abuse. Yeah. And so really, you know, if you see these investigations and you think, oh, that's terrible, I'm glad those people were fired, just be aware that it's not just those individual people. It's everywhere in the industry. If you're exploiting animals, if you're buying and selling them like objects, then they're going to be treated like objects. So, you know, you see these horrific things, just, you know, they only keep happening because people keep paying for them.
Exactly.
There was another event that happened in the past week that you were at, Jillian, right? You saw Dr. Ray Greek speak.
I did.
I'm so excited that you went. I wanted to go. That's really close to where I live. I've been to Green College before, actually, for a similar talk by Dr. Laura Gennara, that we did an interview with her, same kind of topics, animal testing, animal research. So Jen called me right after that. She's not here today, and she said, now I know all the arguments about why animal testing is completely not necessary. Mm-hmm. So what are they in a nutshell, Jillian?
He is such a cool guy to talk to. I asked him like three key questions. One was, you know, how do you find hope in the work that you're doing? And he shared that he felt confident that within the next 10 to 20 years, vivisection will be abolished, not because of government intervention, but because of big pharma, because big pharma sees that there's no profit in it and they're more powerful than government. So that was one of my questions. And the other one was, my son was wondering about what can kids do? And he said, study science, because science always wins. And he said he likes he likes to see young people have a balance, you know, study science and be on the front lines as well, engaging in activism. And the question that I was most excited about was, what can we do as Vancouverites locally? Like, what is our strategy? What can we do that's going to be the strongest thing we can do? And he suggested that writing a bill to have an open debate on the validity of animal testing at the Senate would be the most important thing we can do. And being the country that we live in, Canada, he said we'd have a really good chance of passing such a bill. Because when the general public finds out that animal testing is not only cruel, it's unreliable and it's not profitable, people are gonna say we don't need this anymore. But the debate has to be out there. Like, people just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on. And we're going to have an interview with Dr. Greek on the show in a couple of weeks, I believe.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That'll mm-hmm. be coming up in the next month. Jen's going to be doing that. Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, when we find out these facts and scientific evidence that shows that we don't need to use animals in research and in testing, it just makes the whole case so much stronger. I just read a chapter about that in the interview we'll be featuring next week with Mark Beckhoff, an animal behaviorist. He writes a chapter in his book, The Animal's Agenda, about using lab animals in research. And I learned a lot of things in it that I didn't know. So I'm going to be sharing some of these ideas on next week's show as well.
Right on. Cool. And just quickly, Allison, you had a couple of things as well that you've got going on.
Yeah, a couple of things that I want to plug. I spoke about them last week as well, so I won't go into them too much. But this weekend, Jillian, your son told me it's going to be 32 degrees this Sunday.
Yeah.
What is with that? Because I watched the news this morning and it had gone up to 30 from 28, I think. And now 32, and that's like we normally want that kind of weather in Vancouver, which is kind of, it's starting like today, maybe yesterday too, where we're actually getting summer. Summer just started. We just had our summer solstice. And on Sunday, I'm running for the animals. So,
yay.
But it's only a 5K. I'm not doing the half marathon this year, which, oh my gosh, I'm kind of glad I'm not, because that was tough on me the last 2 years, even when it was like it went up to 22 degrees. But half marathon, 30 minutes, run as fast as I can, as hard as I can, fundraising for the animals for a charity I really support, the Vancouver Humane Society. So I just wanted to put that out there. Vancouver Humane Society is a registered charity in Canada. We feature them on the show sometimes, and they have a lot of great campaigns on all spectrums across the world and across Canada facing animals. They promote the basic general spaying and neutering, which is great, and they have a fund that goes towards people's needs for the companion animals if they have emergencies. It's called Vitti's Fund. And they also have campaigns, like right now I just got an email from them this week speaking about a rodeo in, I think it was like Williams Lake or something like that. I need to look that up. I just got that yesterday. So they're very active in campaigning against the cruelty of the rodeo, and they've had success in their campaigns. And then also they were one of the co-hosts of the Future of Food conference that I attended several weeks ago, which is advocating for more meatless food options in institutions such as schools and cafeterias, and they institute Meatless Monday programs as well. So anyways, they do great work. I really support them. They are a registered charity, so if you make a donation for me on my fundraising page, you will get a tax receipt, and I will post a link to that page on our Facebook page today, Animal Voices Vancouver. Do I have time to mention one other thing, or are we out of time?
Sure, just really quickly.
Okay, so really quickly too, I just wanted to mention again is our July 1st Day of Giving that I'm participating in. It's just a handful of local activists who care. We care about all animals. You're going to be there, Jillian.
Yeah.
And Sinead, you're, in quote, interested. So I hope you make it out. So actually, all three of us are interested in this event. Local activist David is Bister of Plant-Based Food of Natural Products, who is a great advocate for the animals. He actually sponsored me on my run too. I really thank him for that. He's putting this together. I'm helping. I've been collecting donations. So we're going to be going into the downtown east side on July 1st, otherwise known as Canada Day, to actually help people in need there as another way of celebrating Canada Day by giving out donations of personal hygiene items and toothbrushes and shampoo and toothpaste and soap and packaged food. And actually, David is an awesome cook, and he's plant-based, and we're going to be putting together these three course boxed meals to give out to people there, so about 150 at least. So
wow.
I will post the link to our Facebook page if you want to get involved. It's the July 1st Day of Giving.
Right on. Thanks cool. for that, Allison.
Yeah, no problem.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news, from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independents like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maude Barlow.
We are have continued to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings, weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at w2media.ca.
All right, and now for some events. Jillian, what can you tell us about Roaring Silence?
I'm pretty excited to announce that Roaring Silence is coming to Vancouver, actually for in Canada for the first time. And it's going to take place on Saturday, July 8th at 12 p.m. We're going to meet at the Laughing Statues located at Morton Park, which is at the foot of Davie and Denman. And Roaring Silence is a silent demonstration that brings awareness and heightens compassion for the billions of animals who are killed each year. Animals that are exploited, confined, and tortured in the food and fur industries for research, for entertainment, fashion, and as decoration. Demonstrators will march in a silent line holding the pictures of exploited and suffering animals, and the signs will be provided to the demonstrators. The organizers have started a Kickstarter campaign for this event and need support to make the silent demonstration of compassion an epic and unforgettable success. Every pledge will help reach their goal. Any extra money generated from t-shirt sales, in addition to the remainder of our Kickstarter fund goal, will all be donated to local animal sanctuaries. So again, that's in 2 weeks, and it's Saturday, July 8th at 12 p.m. Come join us at the Laughing Statues and be part of history.
So I'll post a link to that Kickstarter campaign on our Facebook page today, and then also just a note that we'll be doing an interview about Roaring Silence to find out more on next week's show with the organizer.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, and the Kickstarter, you can get a great t-shirt and just help them get this thing going. This is also a great event for people who are interested in getting involved with activism but aren't really very outspoken normally. You aren't comfortable speaking to strangers. This is Roaring Silence, so it's just about being there, and you don't have to say anything. Just being there says it all. So definitely keep an eye out for that, July 8th. Also in July, Saturday, July 15th, this is an event that I'm pretty excited about. Night of the Neophytes at Pat's Pub on Saturday, July 15th. It's a bunch of bands, my own included. The Furniture, the Blank Talkers.
That's a band. Yes. I was wondering why you're talking about Furniture.
The Furniture, okay, is a band.
Got it.
The Daisy Stranglers, Siobhan Duval, Beaverette, myself, Sinead Sanders, we're all playing at Pat's Pub. And this is a night that is an evening of music as well as animal rights and vegan awareness.
And food.
Yes, there's a vegan dinner catered by David Isbister of Plant-Based Food. So that's going to be delicious. The tickets are $25 in advance. That's $15 to cover the meal, which is going to be delicious, and $10 to see 6 bands. So that's awesome.
Including Sinead. I'm going to be there, and I'm going to try to drag someone to come with me because that just sounds too fun to pass up. Everything, all music, animal rights, all in one.
That's awesome. And the food, to get the food, you've got to buy tickets in advance. So
and the food looks yummy. David posted the options the other day.
Yes, it
does. So whatever's chosen is going
to
be good.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. So if you want tickets, then reach out to any of the band members. We'll post all this on our Facebook page, on our website, and buy your tickets in advance because it's going to be really a delicious night of music. Really, $25 for 6 bands, a delicious meal, and a talk by animal rights advocate Anna Pippis as well. Ooh. That's a really great deal. So definitely keep an eye out for that. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now for some news. What have you got for us, Jillian?
Bill S-203. you know, last week I saw this Facebook post and it was urgent. Bill S-203 is going to be killed. And I thought, oh my God, here we go again. So like everyone else, I used social media and wrote a personal letter, signed the petition, left voicemails, and I just waited anxiously to see what was going to happen. And what the latest is, it's going to be held over until fall. So they're not making any decisions until fall.
And Bill S-203, can you explain for listeners who aren't aware what that is?
That is a proposed ban on keeping whales and dolphins in captivity in Canada.
Mm-hmm. So pretty huge, and it's, you know, long overdue. Hey?
Yes.
So that's amazing. That's amazing, though, that because we were worried that there's all this pressure from big money makers mm-hmm. like Marineland and the Vancouver Aquarium
yep.
to quash the thing, but enough people spoke out,
exactly.
and so now they've. They haven't got time to deal with it before the summer break. That's wonderful.
Yeah, one senator received 13,000 emails. Oh, so activism does work.
One of those was from me.
Yes, me too. It definitely, it makes a difference to all the people who say it's not going to mm-hmm. make any difference if I send an email to the government. They don't care.
And it only took me like 20 seconds or less of my time because people like Animal Justice make it really easy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, I just clicked on there and it's doing my little part. Everyone can do that.
Yeah, that's really
the difference.
Mm-hmm. And one of the scientists who's been pushing for this bill is Dr. Lori Marino, who we've had on the show before. And she's actually coming to town soon, isn't she?
Yeah, July 11th at the Roundhouse Theater, 7:30. Tickets are $15 and you can get them online.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's going to be fascinating. She's going to be talking about the Whale Sanctuary Project. Which is the plan to build a whale sanctuary for whales that have been in entertainment or not, you know, just a place for whales that cannot be in the wild for one reason or another that doesn't involve being in a concrete box on display for profit. So.
Yes, and they're looking at BC as mm-hmm. one of the locations, so this is really exciting.
Oh, and we did an interview about the Whale Sanctuary Project last year for World Oceans Day, I think
yes.
it was. Or, yes,
it was World
around.
Oceans
yeah,
Day.
Okay. So,
I loved that show.
Check that up. That's animalvoices.org. The podcast can be heard on there to find out all about the possible whale sanctuary on the off the coast of Vancouver Island.
Mm-hmm. And Allison, you also had some circus news for us, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. So just recently, as of 2 days ago, it was voted in New York City to ban wild animals from circuses. Can you believe that?
Yay.
Like, I can't even imagine. Like, there's all these bans of animals coming up, and this is one of them. So, yeah, I just saw this, I think, like this morning in the Huffington Post or yesterday, and it just happened. And there's always this breaking news that's just happening, such as Bill S-203 mm-hmm. or animals being banned from circuses. And I just wanted to give a shout out to my sister, who right now at this time is standing outside the Shriners Circus an hour and a half from where she lives in South Dakota. She drove there this morning with her fellow activist friend, and they're protesting outside the circus. And she said, I don't think it's going to be a friendly crowd talking to us here. I said, you know, just good for you. There's nothing they can do to you. All they can do is yell at you. And thank you for being out there, Liana. And your friend Carrie today to be a voice for the animals. So, you know, if the same thing happens with that circus that has happened to Ringling shut down,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, Shriner Circus is next and NYC has already happened.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the tide is turning for animals as entertainment, animals in captivity, and animal exploitation in general. All these things are connected. And if we don't need to cause suffering and hold animals captive, then why would we, you know? And what kind of entertainment is that anyway? So, you are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. And now for our feature interview. Anna Pippis is the Director of Farmed Animal Advocacy for the Animal Justice Legislative Fund, an expert on Canadian animal welfare laws and undercover investigations, and a former legal advisor to Mercy for Animals Canada. Our producer, Jen DeBell, recorded this interview with her to discuss Mercy for Animals' latest undercover investigation into local chicken catching company Elite Farm Services, contracted out by Lilydale Chicken. Released this week through the website chickentorture.ca, the latest hidden camera footage reveals blatant and horrific animal abuse, which Anna explains is not restricted to isolated incidents, but rampant throughout animal farming. We'll play that interview for you now.
You used to work as a lawyer for the animal rights organization Mercy for Animals, so you're no stranger to seeing the type of cruelty depicted in their most recent investigation of Elite Farm Services and Lilydale Chicken. I've noticed that every time one of these investigations makes it into the media, the general public thinks that was one bad company, I'll buy my meat from another source that treats animals more humanely. And what do you want to say to people who have this take on the investigations?
Yeah, I think that's a really sort of natural and convenient response for people, because the alternative response and the true response, which is that this is just the nature of the industry, is really tough for people. And I think a lot of us who have come to that realization can relate to how challenging it is to have basically your entire worldview turned upside down. So in a sense, I understand why people immediately go to that place of one bad apple. And I think that narrative is somewhat helped along as well when we hear things like, you know, this is the worst animal abuse I've ever seen. I think that sends the message to people that this is an unusual case of animal abuse. And this is what people were saying in regards to this case as well. But let me just also say that maybe this was the worst case of animal abuse that some of the people involved had ever seen, but that was also probably because they had seen very little footage or no footage of the reality of chicken catching. And the chicken catching is notoriously brutal. It's one of the worst parts of the meat chicken cycle. And it's definitely one of the sort of only points of interaction between the chickens and humans, between the chickens and workers. So it's very bad. I mean, yeah, I've been involved with undercover investigations. I've also followed the undercover investigations movement and sort of made it my business to look at footage from all kinds of organizations, Compassion Over Killing and PETA and Animal Equality and other organizations that are doing this work of, you know, documenting what's happening through employees of these companies. And, you know, these jobs are taken at random, so nobody is sort of getting a report of particularly bad circumstances and then going to the facility to try to catch on video what they've heard about. It's not like that. What's happening is job postings that are just made available to the public. Undercover investigators are applying to these jobs just like anyone would, and are just taking jobs knowing full well what we know, that they're going to uncover horrific circumstances, because that's the nature of the industry. I think we all want to believe that it's a few bad apples, because, you know, who could do such a thing? But I think we need to take a step back and understand that these are not monsters. These are sort of normal people, for the most part, within a very monstrous system. And what happens with these workers is that they become desensitized very quickly, because the job sort of requires that of them. Now, if your job is to go to a warehouse that it stinks of ammonia so badly that your eyes water, there's all these sort of sleeping, defenseless baby chickens toppled over onto their chest. Many of them are injured already. They're sort of confused. They're babies, right? So they're sort of peeping like babies. They're very helpless. These are not just any animals. These are baby animals. And they're toppled over onto their chest because they're bred to grow so quickly that they have these giant breasts. And so the workers, you know, they're not kind of showing up to this situation where the animals are loved and cared for and really part of a natural ecosystem. And they're not there to love them. So they show up to the situation. Already it's a nightmare. It's the middle of the night, so throw some sleep deprivation into the mix. They round up the chickens for slaughter when they're sleeping and less likely to sort of run for their lives. And then they're instructed to pick up the chickens upside down, hold them by the legs. They hold 3, 4, 5, up to 9 chickens in each hand. Their leg bones, you know, obviously, of course, they break in this circumstance. That's what happens when you hold this many chickens in one hand and sort of fling them around. And then they throw them into these crates, and they're instructed to work very, very quickly. So that's the backdrop. So in this circumstance, none of us should really be surprised when a worker, picks up a chicken and the leg gets ripped off because the leg is stuck underneath a crate. Or when a worker, you know, thinks it's funny in this boring job and tries to amuse himself by simulating a sex act. Obviously, it's very disturbing, but I think we need to understand why this is so rampant. And just trying to point the finger at a few bad apples and, you know, guaranteed if you go into any other sort of chicken catching situation, or, you know, look it up on YouTube, you can see for yourself, you're going to see the same types of things. And if we keep saying just a bad apple, just a bad apple, just a bad apple, we're missing the point. It's not just a bad apple. And if we really want to understand what's going on, we have to look at, well, why is this happening over and over again? And then we have to do the very uncomfortable thing of realizing what our role is in all of this. If they're doing this to animals and they're doing it because we're farming chickens and chickens are so cheap and we're eating, you know, hundreds of millions of these animals each year, well, who's really sort of, you know, the accomplice in this case? Well, it's us. It's the consumer. It's the people who are purchasing that meat, asking no questions, and just sort of, you know, pointing the finger at somebody else when it comes down and saying, well, I could never do such a thing. Well, we could. We know from psychological experiments that when people do, that people can do very evil things in the right circumstances. So Zimbardo and Milgram, if you're familiar with any of these very famous psychological studies, they showed us that in the right circumstances, any one of us can do very depraved things to others. And so I think that's what we're seeing with these workers.
Mm-hmm. And you have extensive knowledge of the standard legal farming practices in Canada, and I think most Canadians would be surprised to know that the law allows for unimaginable cruelty to animals. So in this video that we're talking about, of course, there were things that were done to animals which was not part of the job and would not be considered legal. But can you give us some examples of those legal practices for various industries that would shock and horrify the public?
Well, you know, the entire industry is sort of premised on emotional and physical deprivation. And yes, in these environments, yes, people are also violating the law sort of at routinely. And I think we've gone into why it just kind of happens so routinely. There's incentives to cut corners on animal welfare because often they're expensive. Your animal has a prolapse. Are you going to call the vet and pay a few hundred dollars? Or are you just going to kind of let that rot out until you can kill the animal? So, I mean, there's lots of illegal stuff that's happening that people can sort of say, well, you know, this shouldn't be happening at all and we need to tighten up on this. And then we can talk about whether that's practical, especially given that these farms aren't being monitored at all. But even backing up, let's just look at the industry as a whole. The entire industry is premised on depriving animals in ways that we personally would never do to animals that we care about. We would never do, you know, to the family dog or to animals that we have a relationship with and can relate to. So in the case of chickens, I mean, these are baby animals born in a hatchery. They'll never know their mothers. And, you know, normally and chickens would be born, their mothers would peep to them, would talk to them through the shell, and the chickens would get to know their voice, and then they would be born, they would hatch, and the chicks would sort of tuck themselves under their mother's wing, and that's where they would find comfort. And anyone who has raised chicks can tell you that they need a lot of comfort. They'll crawl up into your, you know, onto your body for the warmth, and they like to cuddle, and they like the nearness and the warmth. I mean, just like any baby does, right? Like any human baby or any baby of any species is sort of naturally programmed to seek and to need that warmth and that comfort. Right. So first of all, right off the bat, these babies are being born in hatcheries. They're being born and they're sorted into boxes, 100, you know, 100 per box, and they're shipped off to the farm situation. And suffering is born right into their very DNA. So again, talking about meat chickens, they are bred to grow so large and so quickly that they develop all kinds of issues. They have heart cardiovascular problems. They have skeletal deformities. You know, they can barely support their own weight as they start to grow. And so these animals are in this giant, vast warehouse, thousands of them. It becomes reeking. Nobody's changing the litter daily. They'll change the litter between flocks typically, but after weeks of filling up with urine and feces, it becomes quite stinking and disgusting. And then they leave the lights on all the time because that's what keeps the animals awake and eating. So there's a period of dark, and there's some fight in the industry about how much is the required period of dark overnight. But, you know, this is how we torture inmates in Guantanamo. You leave the lights on all the time. So just imagine if you only had, you know, a few hours of dark at night and the rest of the time it was artificial lights, there's no natural lights, you'd go loopy. And these are, again, these are baby animals. With this, I can't imagine a person who can't sympathize with baby, you know, baby animals in this situation. It's like a giant orphanage where there's no caregivers around to provide any comfort and direction.
And they're all peeping for their mothers, aren't they?
And they're all, you know, they're all peeping. You can go to the slaughterhouse and you can see these animals. They've still got their blue eyes, their baby blue eyes, as chickens have when they're young. And they're peeping. They're not, chickens will cluck as when they're more fully grown, but these babies are just peeping. It's really heartbreaking. And that's just the one industry. I mean, that we've just really talked about the meat chicken industry, and we haven't even gotten to the slaughter. They're shackled upside down and their heads are dragged, you know, tread bad. I mean, the whole thing is terrifying. Animals are breaking bones. They're never shown any love or care. It's a total nightmare. I can't imagine anyone would really get to know what's happening and would sort of really allow themselves to feel that and then would feel good about supporting it.
Right.
And that's just the chicken meat industry. So every industry has its problems. So dairy, the babies are being taken away from their mothers. With eggs, I mean, same thing. It's a total nightmare for these animals, all in very different, unique ways, particular to the industry.
Yeah. And, you know, I just always want to mention that before I became vegan 3.5 years ago, I was that person that was buying into the humane myth. I would spend extra money on my SPCA certified meat, eggs, and milk at Whole Foods because I thought the animals were treated better during their lives. And I even thought they had special slaughterhouses that were somehow more humane. And that isn't true. They go to the same slaughterhouse. And I've now seen undercover footage of the so-called humane farms. And I'm not okay with what happens to animals. So as an expert in the area of law for farmed animals in Canada, what do you want to say to consumers who are currently buying into that humane lie?
Yeah, that's a tough one because I think that's everyone's, a lot of people, not everyone, but some people sort of natural first step is to go, okay, this is really terrible. I want to keep eating the way that I'm eating. How can I do it better? And they want to start choosing these humane certified products, but not actually changing their diet. So they want to continue to be eating the same quantity of meat, dairy, and eggs, and have it be something that they can sort of sleep better at night. You know, last year we killed 771 million farmed animals in Canada for food. There's just simply no way to make that humane. That's a huge volume of animals who need to be farmed, sort of mass produced in a factory-like setting. The name factory farm is actually quite fitting of the situation. And so if you're doing it to that many animals, you simply cannot make it humane. And I think people also need to understand that it's better, but it's not, you know, 95% better. It's like 3% better. And that matters. I mean, I'm pleased that it's less bad for some of these animals. But if you're serious about wanting to eliminate animal suffering from your diet, humane certified is not the way to do it. I think there's confusion out there because people sort of gravitate towards that as a first step. And then that's kind of reinforced by animal welfare sort of experts or spokespeople who are doing that as well or who are endorsing it. But I must say many of the people who I know who are involved with humane certified programs are themselves vegan. Why? Because they know that humane certified is not the solution. They're doing it because they want to make it less bad, and that 3% less suffering or whatever it is matters when you're talking about hundreds of millions of animals. I mean, you really are reducing harm. You really are reducing suffering, but you are far, far, far from eliminating it. So, I mean, bringing it back to humane certified chickens, they are still born in hatcheries. They are still housed in warehouse-like settings. They still will never know their mothers. It's still like these giant, freaky orphanages. They are still genetically selected to have suffering built into their DNA, suffering from heart attacks as babies, having lameness, joint problems, skeletal problems, major, major issues, suffering because of their genetics. They are still rounded up for slaughter, and then they still go on the same truck, and then they still go to the same slaughterhouse, and they're still killed in the same way, shackled upside down in these shackles that can break their life. So what's better about humane certified chicken? They have like a few square inches more space. You know, and a few other things, a few other very, very minor things that I think when people look into it, they realize, you know, okay, this is really not Old McDonald's farm. This is not much better. And then I would say, like, even if it is sort of Old McDonald's farm, heritage farm with, you know, a mix of animals and like good luck finding such a thing. But if you can find such a thing, then it's like, then do you really need to kill an animal to eat? I mean, we're not talking about We're not talking about hundreds of years ago when this is sort of a necessity to survive. In this day and age, most of us, and I would guess that probably everyone listening, has access to a supermarket filled with thousands of options, of plant-based options that we can choose from. We have tons of herbs and spices. We have tons of vegetables and fruits, tons of beans, lentils, you know, legumes, all kinds of even plant-based meat alternatives, meat options that people can choose from. So, you know, yes, I mean, if we're talking about a world of scarcity and a world where we don't have kind of the globalized systems of supermarkets, then okay, sure, let's make it more humane. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a whole new world now, and we've got to recalibrate our ethics to that. When the choice is, do I take a life, do I cause suffering, or do I not, because I can easily do so, I think, you know, I think the right thing to do is to not cause the harm. And I have yet to hear a really compelling reason why we shouldn't.
Yeah. And I just want to say also that I wish I knew sooner that when I was buying my $10 humane certified eggs, that they came from a hatchery where they could put the male chicks into a grinder alive after they were born. And still be certified humane. And I wish people knew this. That's absolutely shocking that the SPCA would put their stamp on those eggs, but they do.
Right. And I think that's part of the confusion. Now, I will say that I think that companies like Whole Foods and organizations like the BCSPCA are doing it for the right reasons. And I think that there is value in what they're doing to push producers to do better. But I completely agree. I think it's sort of perpetuating people assuaging their guilt and assuaging them really sort of making steps in the right direction. Because I think what really needs to happen is people need to become educated, become aware of what's happening. And then basically across the board, most people are going to go, this does not align with my ethics. But when you go into Whole Foods and it says, you know, be compassionate, buy these animal products, most people aren't doing the research needed to understand that that's just marketing. We don't want to, right? Like we don't really want to know. It's like, all right, I will pay. It's like we're in cahoots with these like humane sort of certifications. It's like, okay, I'll pay $7 in order to sleep well at night. And in exchange for that, I won't ask too many questions.
But
if you want to get serious with yourself and really live with integrity, call these companies and ask. Say, you know, what if it's eggs, what do you do to the male chicks? How long do the hens live, and how does that compare to nature? Do the family structures stay together? There's dozens of questions, pointed questions that you can ask that are rhetorical questions, essentially, because we know that this is how they're being treated, that you will not like the answer to. Same thing with dairy. What happens when the calves are born? Do they get to stay with their mothers? I don't care which dairy you're looking at. They do not in this day and age. So no matter how organic, no matter how family run this family farm is, they represent destroyed families.
Right. You can't have a mother cow constantly producing milk without her constantly being pregnant. And if you're allowing her babies to have that milk, then we're not profiting from it. So of course they're taken away from the mother. And of course the males are turned into veal because they want to profit off of everything that they can.
Well, I mean, exactly. And it would simply not be sustainable to keep the babies with their mothers. You need to take the babies away. You need to give them low-grade formula. You need to turn them into a product themselves, whether it's veal if they're males or whether it's dairy cows themselves. But there's no room in this model of thin margins to sort of like include love and to include family structures and to include anything that's not absolutely necessary. And, you know, once upon a time, people all lived on farms. People all understood this. People all understood that mother's milk is, of course, a result of pregnancy and is intended for this mother's baby. We largely urbanized and moved to cities, and then we sort of got out of touch with farming. And in that time, we've also had sort of just the growth of supermarkets filled with all of these, like, you know, like we discussed, filled with all these plant-based options. And so we're really in a new time right now. It's like people will say, well, we've always done it this way. Yeah, but I mean, the world has never been like it is right now. Food is plentiful, and it's varied, and it's relatively cheap if you look sort of over history. So we've got to get a new ethic of eating, and that ethic requires us to not be lazy. You know, here's the tough love, requires us to really all play our role. And if if we have the ability to go to the supermarket and make choices about what we eat, these are ethical decisions. They're not, you don't sort of absolve yourself from making ethical decisions by just doing what you've already done. That in and of itself is an ethical decision.
Right. And, you know, when I was at the Lilydale chicken protest last weekend, which was set up because of the recent investigation, activists wanted to raise awareness. So the media showed up. And thank you to you for sending out that press release, because every media outlet was there. So thank you.
My pleasure.
But I was frustrated because I was interviewed by three of them, and my interviews were all pretty much identical. And the interviewer kept saying to me all the yeah, but arguments. Yeah, but what's wrong with people just going vegetarian? And yeah, but why can't people just reduce their meat? Why can't they just buy humane meat? And I was on camera, so I didn't want to sound too frustrated. But I was, because in particular, one person asked me the same questions five different ways, even though I was giving a very clear answer that the only way to eliminate cruelty is to go vegan. And it's easy. And why is your next question then, why isn't vegetarianism enough? So what I want to ask you is, why is it that the media, after these investigations come out, refuses to put out the message of what we're trying to say, that this happens in the industry, it's industry-wide, all across Canada, there's legal practices that are totally cruel, and let's promote veganism. I don't think any one of them said the word vegan, even though it was written on our signs. It was edited out of our interviews when we made statements like that. So what do you think?
Well, I think it can help to think of the media not as sort of a monolith, but just as individual people. They're reporters or they're camera people who are bringing it back to a station or whatever, they're videographers. They're people who are just people. They're just like any other individual person who we might be interacting on the street. And when they're producing news, they're producing entertainment for their audience. And they're thinking, you know, sort of they're looking at what's going to resonate with my audience via the lens of themselves. What do I think is interesting? And because the majority of them aren't vegan and they don't get it, they're not going to kind of like latch on to that. They don't get it yet. They haven't really started thinking deeply enough about these issues. So keep that in mind. And then here, my advice is to, yes, have the word vegan on signs and continue to say what you're saying, but also work with the people from the media. So follow up with them, get their email addresses, send them stuff that you think will be really compelling, whatever their sort of sticking point was, send them stuff that is going to sort of work to dismantle their false ideas about the industry. It might not become a really compelling news story because, you know, again, the audience might not be ready to hear it. Recently, last week, I was on the national news saying that there's no way to humanely farm animals. Well, partly that was a result of a lot of lobbying I did behind the scenes with the reporter. I had a long conversation with her about the nature of how the industry is self-regulating, how regulations are ineffective, how it's just sort of inherently cruel. And I talked about that. I sent her emails to follow up showing lots of other instances of chicken catching and how it's bad. I sent her vegan cooking ideas. I chatted with her about sources of iron and protein. I mean, I was working with her the way that I'd work with any individual, because once she is on side, then she's going to be producing the story and she's going to be the one writing the narrative. So she, you know, of all people needs to understand that. And so that's something that we can all do. We can all work with people who are members of the media, whether it's kind of for a particular story or just in a more ongoing way, you know, meet up with them for coffee, like target these relationships, because when these people are producing a story, we want them to really understand it.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, and then failing that, don't worry about it, because this is all chipping away. This issue is not going anywhere. Industry is not going to dramatically change so that this becomes a non-issue. This is going to keep being an issue. And as people become more and more educated with every single media hit, with every single sort of educational, leaflet, literature, educational fair, chalktivism, whatever, Tindervism, like what you're doing, like whatever sort of form of activism that people are doing that's hitting people, it's all sort of cumulative. And And for each of us, something is going to break through more than others, is going to enter our consciousness, and people are going to start to get it, and the conversation is going to change. And the nature of social change is that once you get a foothold, it really starts to snowball. So we can look to past examples of this, but you know, you can see people are chipping away and chipping away and chipping away, and it's frustrating. Yeah. But eventually the ideas start to stick, and then they get really sticky really quickly. So, you know, just keep at it and try not to see it as sort of a failure and to be too frustrated by it, because it's a huge victory to even get that issue on the news and to say what you need to say with integrity, because maybe that didn't make it on the news this time, but it did enter that reporter's consciousness. And maybe that person will choose the plant-based option next time. Maybe they will realize how easy it is to be vegan. Maybe they'll get the entire, you know, the entire newsroom to do Meatless Monday. So you just never know. You just keep at it and you celebrate the little victories.
Right. Well, thank you so much. That's awesome advice. And now moving on, I just want to say to everyone out there that Anna Pippis is a busy mother of two, working full-time as an activist and a lawyer, very strategic. And also, you do have time to cook vegan meals for your family with all that you're doing. So why don't you let our listeners know right now how easy that is? Because I hear a lot of people saying, I'm raising kids, I don't have time to change my diet, I don't have time to cook vegan, it takes too long. This isn't really true. It's easier and faster to cook vegan. So tell us what you can recommend for busy families.
Well, I mean, look, like if you're raising a family, you have to know that eating a diet rich in animal products and low in plant-based products is just simply not healthy. The science is just increasingly clear. I think that the science is telling us that a diet of about 95% plant-based foods at least is sort of required for good health and longevity and avoiding lifestyle diseases. So if you sort of feel incapable of making a vegan meal, sincerely, you know, think about your health. Put your health on the table and make it a priority. The health of your family is a real pressing issue for many of us who are raising families. So, you know, we've been talking about ethics, but even if you just want to put ethics aside and get yourself some motivation by sort of putting self-interest out there, because, hey, we're all sort of thinking about ourselves and our families first, you have to sort of understand what's going on with these diets rich in animal products and leading to lifestyle diseases. And that message isn't getting out there because our food diet is in the pockets of lobbying interests. Even our sort of Heart and Stroke Foundation and cancer societies, they too are in the pockets of lobby groups. So none of them are going to say, you know, sound the alarm, get the animal products out of your diet. But they leave subtle clues. They say they say more subtle things that lead to that same conclusion that just aren't quite sounding the alarm in the same way. So, you know, people need to know that this is really an urgent matter for our public health and for our own personal health as well. And as for the time and the time it takes, I mean, it doesn't take it takes time to learn new habits, sure. And if you're feeling busy and feeling overwhelmed, you know, it's probably not a lack of time that you have. It's sort of a lack of emotional energy or sort of mental bandwidth to be devoting to learning new habits. And I get that. And so to that, I would just say, it's a matter of just making it a priority. So make a conscious decision that I am going to prioritize this. I am going to learn some new habits. I'm going to learn some new dishes and some new styles of cooking, and seek out those resources, learn a few new things. You know, if you have family taco night, just don't have the beef, right? Like just have the beans and the vegetables, and this is a complete and healthy meal. Same thing with pasta. There's tons of really easy pasta sauces, cashew cream based pasta sauces, pesto, tomato sauces, where you don't need the beef. Swap in lentils or use a vegan meat alternative. Stir fries. I mean, who doesn't love an already made stir fries? This is a really simple thing to do. Use tofu. Use something else that you like that's not meat. But we all need to get like a huge hunk of dead animals as the center of our plate. We all need to get away from that paradigm, whether we're talking about the sustainability of our shared planet, whether we're talking about our own personal health and the health of our families, or whether we're talking about the immense, immense animal suffering and torture that's happening on our very own country's farms. We need to seriously shift away from that paradigm and reach out. People will help. I don't know. I haven't met a vegan yet who is not willing and enthusiastic about providing help and support. And, you know, and a lot of us have a lot of energy because eating a ton of plants and a plant-based diet really does give you an energy and a mood boost. And, you know, there's tons of research to support this as well. So, so try it, go for it, reach out. I know Jen will help. I will help. We're all very, very happy to do what we can because we feel so deeply passionate about this issue. Why? Because animals are suffering, and that's a very, very motivating reason.
And what is your Instagram that people can follow for your recipe ideas?
So I have an account at instagram.com/easyanimalfree. The idea is just to showcase sort of the very normal, regular things that I prepare for my family. Easy Animal Free is exactly what it sounds like. It's easy animal-free recipes. I don't have time to do a lot of elaborate cooking food. It needs to be quick. And we eat a big variety of plant-based foods. So if you need some inspiration or ideas, go there and email me and connect and let's do it.
And if people don't have Instagram, can they find you elsewhere for inspiration?
Yes. So Easy Animal Free is also a Facebook page. It just cross posts from Instagram to Facebook. So you should be able to also look up Easy Animal Free on Facebook. Or alternatively, you don't even need an Instagram account. You can just go, it's a public URL. So you can just go to www.instagram.com/easyanimalfree and just scroll through to get those ideas.
That's awesome. And you know, all the recipe ideas that you just gave examples of, that would all be faster than cooking up meat. Like you mentioned the fake meat product that you could put into your stir fry or your tacos or just the beans in the tacos. How long does it take to open a can of beans and heat them on the stove?
Right, exactly. And I think when people say they don't have the time, what they really mean is this is not a priority to me and I don't have the mental energy to think about this right now. So right. I mean, really, it is simply not more time consuming. Like how long does it take to make a peanut butter sandwich, right? Like it's very, or to cut up an apple. Like it's just, it's not time consuming. I'm living proof of that. I'm extremely busy. And I make, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and snacks, 3 snacks a day for my kids. And I still do a bunch of other stuff. So I'm not spending a ton of time doing it. I sympathize, though, that when changing habits and getting new ideas can feel overwhelming. So I get it. But you do have the time. I guess that's my takeaway message is you do have the time. You just need to just commit.
And I always want to say to people with whatever excuse they have not to go vegan, imagine yourself saying that to an animal on its way to slaughter. Sorry, we're putting you through this, but, and then follow up with whatever terrible excuse they
have. But I just don't have the time to open a can of beans.
Terrible. Well, thank you so much, Anna. I love having you on the show. You're always a wealth of information. Again, everybody, this was Anna Pippis, an animal rights lawyer with Animal Justice, and I highly recommend checking out their website, Animal Justice. Is it .ca or .com?
It's .ca.
Yeah, and you are the Farmed Animal Advocacy Director. Correct?
Correct.
And the cases are incredible. I recommend giving a monthly donation to them if you can. They are really fighting a good fight for Canadian farmed animals. Well, all animals. Your department is the farmed animals, but
that's right. Yeah, but for all successful. Animals. Yeah, changing the legal status for animals.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
What a great interview there with Anna Pippis. Anna, just a reminder, Anna Pippis will be speaking on Saturday, July 15th at Pat's Pub. Again, 7:30 dinner, bands at 8. If you want the dinner, do buy your tickets in advance in the next week or two because the dinner will not be available at the door. So that's $15 for the dinner, $10 for 6 bands, and so $25 total. That's a great value. Definitely buy those tickets soon.
We'll post the Facebook link when today?
Yes.
Okay, today. So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our show next Friday, June the 30th. We will be having an interview with local organizer Daphna Kedem on the Roaring Silence event that she will be holding on July the 8th that we talked about on today's show. We will also have a feature interview with Mark Beckoff, who is a world-renowned animal behaviorist, and he will be speaking on some of the issues covered in his new book, The Animal's Agenda, such as animals used in lab research, animals in zoos, and the ethics of animal welfare science. Make sure to check out all of our latest podcasts at animalvoices.org. We're also on iTunes. Twitter is Animal Voices YVR and Facebook is Animal Voices Vancouver. We are closing the show now with a song called, it's by the Beatanias, who are actually a local group, and it's their version of Townes Van Zandt's song Waiting Around to Die. So that's pretty telling and dedicated to this week's show, The Chickens Who Are Waiting to Die. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Sometimes I don't know where this dirty road is taking me. Sometimes I don't know the reason why, so I guess I'll keep gambling lots of moves and lots of rambling. Well, it's easier than just waiting around to die. Well, one time, friends, I had a mirror. I even had a pal. He beat her with a belt once, close she cried. She told him to take care of me. She headed down to Tennessee. Well, it's easier just waiting around to die. Then I came of age and I found a girl in a Tuscaloosa bar. She cleaned me out and she hit it on the side. Well, I tried to kill the pain. I bought some wine off the train. Well, it was easier than just waiting around to die. And a friend said he knew where some easy money was. We robbed a man and brother, did we fly? But the posse caught up with me and they dragged me back to Muskogee. And now it's 2 long years waiting around to die. And together, we're gonna wait around.